Curiosity, Innovation, and the Future. We first met Professor Po Chi-Wu last November when he was in town lecturing at the Schuyler School of Business at the University of Hawaii. A visiting professor from UC Berkeley and adjunct professor at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, he returns to Honolulu this month to share his expertise. His upcoming lecture will explore how innovation drives change.
The particular twist in this is that I am now associated with an academic work for the last 10 years. When I was young, I was set on a path to become an academic, and I tried everything to get as far away from academia as I could. I think part of it was kind of a rebellion in the sense that my father was a world-class theoretical physicist. And one of the things that he's most famous for is that the first two Chinese to win a Nobel Prize in physics were his students. Not just students in his class or graduate students, but he discovered them when they were undergraduate students in mainland China. My parents were from mainland China. And when he noticed their talent, he helped bring them to the U.S., get their further education, and kind of was a lifelong mentor for them. So that was very impressive. But then, I guess a couple generations back, I have a great-great-grandfather, somebody who was one of the last so-called Hanlin scholars. And that was a significant accomplishment in those days.
Yeah, so, and here you are. You did not manage to avoid your fate.
Well, this is the whole point of fate, right? You do everything you can. You say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to plan. I'm going to prepare myself. I want to have different goals. And eventually fate just says, well, you know, there's this little thing that you didn't actually complete. And I have to say that it has been amazingly rewarding. I don't think I was completely amazed, and I don't regret the fact that I didn't take the more direct path, because the things I am able to do now as an educator are things I would never have been able to do if I had gone the academic route. And that's really important. And that was actually sort of the kernel of what I started thinking about. I didn't want to be, when I was a child, looking at my father, for example, as a theoretical physicist, you know, we talked about ivory tower science, you know, ivory tower scientists, and you're very removed from society. And I've always been enthralled by science and technology. I grew up in the age of the first rockets and, you know, the first man on the moon was when I was in college, and technology, computers. When I was in high school, I was privileged to work on one of the earliest IBM so-called mainframes, the so-called 360, IBM 360. This is about, you know, the size of this room. So I've kind of grown up with all of this and always found it something that I always wanted to do. But I was interested in again, how it could affect people and society. Actually, having taken the more commercial route through venture capital and working with startup companies, I bring a very different dimension to what I can offer to the students, which is I don't lecture to them, right? This is very important. I focus on what they can learn. And speaking with David Ai, we're talking about some new programs we'd like to bring to the University of Hawaii. And to Hawaii as a whole state, and not just as an institution, but really to help our local population, and I mean both the local Hawaiian population as well as all the citizens of the state, to understand that you have a lot of resources and you have a lot of advantages here in Hawaii that are unique to the United States and to the world. And there's a tremendous opportunity really to inspire and help train young people, not only university, but even, you know, moving into like high school and middle school, to inspire these young people to really look at themselves differently. It's really all a matter of mindset and really the ability to express yourself in creative things or in innovative things is about your mindset. And you have to look at the world differently. You can't just look at the world and see it the way everybody else sees it. I mean, there's nothing new there by definition. But part of the problem with education is that it's very much tied to very conventional ways, to knowledge that has already been known. And what we teach in school is master this known knowledge, right? Solve problems we already know how to solve, and then we give you a diploma and we say you're good to go. That may have been true 30 or 40 years ago, but today that contract no longer applies. And so students need to learn how to solve new problems with new knowledge.
So let's talk about curiosity and innovation and the speed at which things are changing our lives.
So all of this, we call it an exponential rate of change, is in fact another reflection of the so-called Moore's Law of computers. The design of microprocessors, the integrated circuits that drive computers, the net effect of that in the so-called Moore's Law is that the power doubles every 18 months. And that, by definition, is an exponential rate of growth. And because we use computers in absolutely everything today, that's what's forcing the change. And so we have many more new tools, not just computers and smartphones, but every part of our lives are affected by this, mostly for the positive. But, of course, there are also some new threats. Now, what's happening with the so-called millennial generation, and that's a particularly interesting area to focus on, many people think that, well, they're obsessed with their phones and their games and Facebook and so on, social media. And all of that is undoubtedly true. However, this generation is interacting, you know, among themselves in a very different way because they have these new tools. And they're used to thinking about the way these tools are designed. Their brains are literally being shaped by the way the software is designed. This is not necessarily a bad thing, but part of what is happening is that they are a little bit removed from sort of the problem side. Human society has always designed new tools in order to solve problems. That's why we do it. And here we have new kinds of technology, what makes sort of everyday problems less obvious, right? Everything is about convenience. One button this, one button that, instant gratification, instant visual kinds of connections. And it's all very good, but in many ways it's reducing our capacity to feel curious, because curiosity actually takes work. Curiosity is a natural phenomenon that the brain actually feeds on itself. It secretes a hormone called dopamine, which also happens to affect our pleasure center. So the more we exercise our curiosity, the more we feel pleasure in doing so, which is part of the inspiration for learning. And it's a wonderful thing. But if you gratify everything too quickly, then this doesn't kick in. You know, it's kind of like you short circuit it and you go right to the pleasure center and you miss all that cognitive activity.
So are we dumbing down?
In some ways we are, you know, and it's really quite frightening because it's like, you know, people will ask, you know, they don't even think about how things get done anymore. They just think, oh, well, there's an app for that. You know, let me look on my phone or let me look it up on Google. Which is wonderful that we have these answers at our disposal through these kinds of search engines. But a bigger problem is, how do you know the information you're getting is now correct or accurate? And even Google searches, we know, have various biases. And friends, people I know talk about the internet as this giant garbage disposal, the dumpster.
A dump.
Because literally, lots of stuff is getting dumped out there, and a lot of it is unreliable. Some of it is intentional and misinformation and the fake news, whatever you want to call it. And it's increasingly difficult to sort out what is real. And this is a major, major challenge.
So what do we do? I mean, so the up-and-coming generation, they have a different operating system than maybe folks of our generation, but they're in the workplace. How do we go forward?
So one of the challenges in the workplace is that for middle-level managers who, of course, are a little bit older, they're hiring these new young people. These new young people know the technology better than their managers, and the managers say, well, you know, here's the task, go do this. And of course, they're going to use their own tools, and the manager says, I don't even know what you're doing. Now, that's a dilemma, because he cannot say, well, you have to do it using my old tools, because that would be inefficient, and they wouldn't know how to do that. And he can't argue with a success because they can do it. And so the traditional sense of boundaries and of power is really shifted. And this is the thing about technology. The technology drives change, and part of the change is a shift in power. Who has the power? Of course, it's people who have the knowledge, and the ability to use the new tools will have more knowledge. So what we need to do as the older generation is we have to both nurture and encourage young people, particularly their curiosity, remind them of the social context and the social contract we have between real people, remind them of the history that we have, whether it's a political history, how we understand our democratic process, which is a hot topic right now, or any of the issues, whether it's gender equality or racial equality or income disparities. What young people lack is what the one thing, I should put it the other way, and this is important for me as an educator. When I first was invited to teach about 10 years ago, I thought very hard about, okay, what can I actually offer to young students? They don't want to listen to lectures, and I don't want a lecture either because that would bore me, and I'm no longer a domain expert. So what can I offer? And I asked myself, what is the value of 25 or 30 years of work experience, right? If it's not just the knowledge anymore. So I said, okay, there must be something in this. I said, oh, it's context and perspective, because a young person who hasn't lived long enough can listen to me talk about something in a different country or a different time, but they still won't understand it until they live through it. So you don't get the context and perspective. And then you ask, okay, so what's good about that? The value in that is I know how to ask better questions, and that's really, really critical. And this is the point. Young people don't know the questions they should be asking. They're too used to looking for answers. Answers come easily today, search engine, or they ask friends. And the problem is, again, they don't know the right questions to ask. Therefore, they can't discriminate between what is real and reliable and something they can build on. And this is dangerous. And I think they have an instinctive reaction to that. They know this is kind of shaky.
So do you have a suggestion? Are there brain gym exercises they should do to increase their capacity for curiosity?
I think that the short answer is yes. But I think one of the more interesting ideas is actually for those of us who are on the other side of the millennial generation to remember that we, our brains, can also continue to grow and develop. And it is a process. So this is relatively new. You know, 30 years ago, we thought the brain was divided into different parts, and you have left brain, right brain. But what we're learning today is the brain has amazing plasticity. That's the technical term for it, meaning different parts of the brain can actually take over functions that we thought were more relegated to certain regions. And we also realized that when I was a child, they used to say, well, you're losing 25,000 brain cells every day, right? And that may be true, but what I tell my students is, by the time you complete my course, my semester-long course, I promise you will have new brain cells, because I'm forcing you to think in these new ways, and you'll have new neural pathways, and it'll create new brain cells. So we should have this giant national global program to say, hey, let's all try to increase our neural pathways. Let's have older generations, younger generations. Let's get all kinds of people together to exercise curiosity in whatever way. You know, we have these things like science fairs for high school kids and even middle school kids. These are wonderful opportunities where adults can work with young people and children to learn along with them. And that's my philosophy of teaching as well, is that I have something to offer, but they have a lot to offer to me, and I need to learn something from them. I need to know what they're thinking about, what do they care about, how they want, they're looking at their futures, because we're all absolutely intertwined here. It's not like we can just do a handoff and, you know, say good luck.
So it's basically walking hand in hand going forward.
I love that image.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Wu.
Well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you. That was Professor Po Chi Wu, described as an innovation provocateur. He returns for an April 25th lecture and April 27th workshop hosted by the University of Hawaii Outreach College. Check it out. Pick his brain. For information, to find out more, check our webpage at hawaiipublicradio.org.